Dr. Charlotte Bayon presents for the Murray State University History Forum, and the topic you're speaking on is China's one-child policy.
Okay, I'm going to talk generally about the, about women and birth rate among women in traditional China, and then move on into the discussion of the one-child policy, which started officially, I think, in 1979. And it didn't directly have anything to do with women, but it did wind up with a great impact on the numbers of female babies being born.
Well, at one time, was there a practice of getting rid of a girl child? Or is that an old myth?
No. It's true, and it's common throughout much of the world, not uniquely China, but there was the practice of infanticide in China, and it favored boy babies over girl babies. At any given time, the latest estimate I've seen is that in traditional China, pre-modern, there would be about 10% of girls were, in effect, missing. That there'd be about 10% of men who never married because those girls weren't there.
So in the 70s, an official policy was promulgated about one child.
About one child. And that was simply because the government was concerned at that point that if they were going into the modernizations, and Deng Xiaoping had just announced the four modernizations, and they were going to have economic reforms, the fear was that the continuing increasing birth rate would simply literally eat up all the extra productivity that they hoped to unleash. So they felt that it was time to be concerned about population.
Have there been unintended consequences?
I would say one of the unintended consequences is that you have an aging population with what they call the 4-2-1 problem. You've got a married couple, husband and wife, the two, who have four parents to take care of, but they can look forward to having only one child taking care of them.
And how will that out?
Well, that's what they're increasingly concerned with. More and more elderly parents will be on their own, as is true in Japan and in Korea, with the smaller families and then the decline in the Confucian sense of responsibility to the elder generation and moving to the cities and leaving parents in the countryside. You've got elderly people with no one to care for them, but it's also there's concern about what this means for the workforce down the road. The entering kindergarten classes or the first year enrollment in school classes between the 1990s and the present, I believe, the numbers have gone down by about a third. And so the overall population hasn't begun to fall yet, but that's because overall it's quite young. But the expectation is that by 2025, I've got the figure someplace, X number of people will be over 65, let's say 20%. In Japan, it's already 25% of the population is over 65. But there's concern about the burden that'll place on society as a whole.
What are the social welfare nets in Japan and China for seniors?
I'm not that clear on the social welfare net in Japan. I think it's a bit better, although there is a tremendous expectation that you save a lot for the future. But in China, the traditional social welfare net was having sons who would grow up to work on the farm and take care of your support. And that's true in any pre-modern agricultural society. Recently, with the economic reform since the 1980s, there's been a gradual decrease in the number of state-owned enterprises. And those so-called SOEs, they had the pensions and the pension programs for retired workers. But with more and more private enterprise in China, they weren't required to have any kind of social welfare net. That left a lot of people falling through the cracks. That although the government is now beginning to address that again and seeing about bringing in something closer to our idea of social security. But right now, there's a lot of concern.
I'm assuming that China has some fairly successful methods of birth control.
Generally, the rate for use of birth control among women of childbearing age is about 80-some percent, which is much higher than in developing countries, where it's usually about a third. The Chinese government has various coercive and high-pressure methods to use, plus as the country modernizes, the birth rate goes down. It did certainly between the beginning of the 19th century and the end of the 19th century in the United States, the birth rate took a steep dive. But the birth control methods that have been most preferred by the government, which does provide the health care, are intrauterine devices and sterilization, that in part because they don't require constant decisions. They're either long-term or permanent in the case of sterilization.
Again, long-term, what would you say are the greatest implications of the one-child policy, aside from seniors without caregivers?
Mm-hmm. Well, then the low and the labor force, that which will put Chinese workers in a better position to demand better working conditions, and that's certainly already started. If you just go to Walmart and look to see where the cheapest clothing is being made, it's not being made in China anymore. It's Bangladesh, Indonesia. Workers at companies like Foxconn in China have been successfully demanding better working conditions. That I suppose another consequence is a combination of the one-child policy and Western technology. Because the birth rate had already dropped in urban China greatly before the one-child policy. And that's just part and parcel of modernization and urban life and the fact that the baby was going to live longer, or well, the baby was going to live. The People's Republic did an excellent job of public health campaigns in the 1950s. Sterilize the scissors, that get the snails out of the rice paddies for schistosomiasis and other problems, eliminating neonatal diarrhea problems. They did an excellent job. That and then more crowded urban conditions, then the chance for public education for your child, that contributed to decisions that had already lowered the urban birth rate. Then the one-child policies announced with the hope that it would be across the boards. And the birth rate did continue to drop. But when you get to the late 80s, early 90s, you get a Western technological innovation, and that's ultrasound. And ultrasound can be used to determine the sex of the baby. And that combination, if you are only going to have one, then the sex of the baby becomes more important. Simply, if the baby turns out to be female instead of male, then it was far more likely to be aborted. And then you began to get a great gender gap, so that in some areas of China in the early 2000s, they were reporting, the normal birth rate is about 105 males for 100 females, simply because boy babies at every stage in pregnancy and early childhood have a higher death rate. So you need 105 to 100 females. But the rates were showing up 117, 118 boys overall in China in, the 2000 census, so that it was a very skewed ratio. And there's a lot of argument about just how many females are missing, but one figure I saw was, say, 41 million missing baby girls that were simply never born.
What consequence has that had for mating?
Well, if you figure there was always about 10% of males in China who did not marry, but now the estimates are that by 2020, when that generation of young men at marriage age, the Chinese government is estimating perhaps 20% will not be able to marry. And the government's becoming concerned about this, which means that you've got a whole population of young men who will never be able to have the things that the Chinese have always considered important, and that is have a family. Because in China, unlike Europe, everybody married, whereas in Europe, I think you had about a 10% of rate of men and women who never married, and it was socially acceptable. But in China, the assumption was you married, if at all possible, except for that 10% of males who couldn't. But that was what a peasant hoped for, was marriage and children for economic support, old age insurance, and also really for religious, psychological support, because that child would continue your family line. And you would have a son who would be able to have the proper funeral rituals for you when you died. So therefore, you would enter the afterlife because you had a son.
In Chinese society, is there still parental matchmaking?
Well, there was parental matchmaking a lot longer than there was in the West. And there's certainly still parental introductions and parents sticking their nose in saying, isn't it about time you found someone? But the Chinese have also turned, as they move to cities, they're no longer, many, many young Chinese are no longer living with their parents. They depend on workplace introductions, friends introductions. Dating services are tremendously popular in China right now. Computer dating services, some of the things we see in Western cities, meet and greet, 5-minute dates, advertisements, lonely hearts. There's a lot of emphasis on finding ways to meet marriageable people. But particularly important for men, that because as women get potentially scarcer.
So do you see a turning around to this?
I think so. I think young women can hold out for a better deal, that they can demand more. One article that a friend from Berea sent me said that one of the things that's fueling the rise in property values and the high prices on apartments in cities is that young men are, as soon as they can afford to, get themselves a nice apartment to make themselves more attractive to potential equally educated women. And so that's driving up property values. And I kind of look at it as, like, you build it, they will come.
The policy isn't still in effect.
The policy is still in effect, but it actually had been loosened way back in the 1980s. One Chinese official estimated that the percentage of the population of childbearing age that was covered by a strict one-child policy was about 40% of the people. Because in the 80s, they backed off in the countryside and said, if you'd had one child and it was a girl, then you could petition, and it, usually with a 5-year interval, you could try for a second. They didn't relax it in the cities, but the cities already had pretty well dropped to a one-child birth rate because of small apartments and the cost of education for your children. Because the Chinese have always put a premium on education, and that's certainly true in the modern age. So the idea is you want, it costs a lot to educate your children, especially at the higher level, so you have one child and put all your money in one basket.
Charlotte, thanks for speaking with us.
You're more than welcome.